Welcome to the Rent to Rent Success Podcast, the only podcast entirely dedicated to helping you achieve rent to rent success. We talk about the ethical way to get you started in property without buying it. This is our place to inspire each other to believe bigger, to be bolder, and to be game changers for good. Property investors and sisters Stephanie and Nikki Taylor are your guides on this exciting ride. Let's start up the engines and get ready to fly. Hello, hello, hello. Welcome back to the Rent to Rent Success Podcast. I'm delighted today to be joined by Wendy Whittaker-Large. I've known Wendy for a number of years. Absolutely one of the best to learn about HMOs. We talk about renting HMOs, and Wendy primarily is involved in buying and investing in HMOs. And she has her own company, Best Nest, a high-end HMO company. She's founder of HMO Success, a dynamic and successful training company, author of two amazing books on HMO investment. I've got both of those. And she works closely with people who want that financial freedom and want to do so by buying property. And Wendy's also the founder of the HMO Council Tax Reform Group to stop council tax being added to HMO rooms. It's absolutely scandalous what's happening there. And I'm sure we'll come on to that during this podcast episode. And finally, Wendy and I are both, we're both contributors to the Iconic Wealth for Women book. And we're both speaking at the Iconic Wealth for Women event in September, hosted by Kylie Anderson. And we'd love to see some of you there and actually meet you in person. So Wendy, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. It's great to be here.
Great. Well, and I know that you were just on a call about the council tax, weren't you?
I think most, I would say 50% of my free time at the moment is spent on the campaign. Yes. And I was just speaking to a client earlier about his fight to remove council tax from his HMO.
Individual room council tax. So we're going to come on to that. But really where I want to start, Wendy, is for many of us, property was a bit of a revelation and a bit of a shock and a surprise. So tell us about how you got into property and why.
Well, I started a long time ago, about 25 years ago. I bought my first investment property, and it was actually my mum who encouraged me to do this. I think it was something that she had wanted to do, but not really ever had the means or the perhaps the mindset to do it. And I inherited a small pot of money when I was in my mid-20s. And you know, when you're in your mid-20s, there's lots of things you can spend that money on. But I decided that I was going to do something that was a bit more of a long-term legacy. I already had two small children, and so I wanted to do something that was good for them long-term as well. And I talked to my mum, and my mum said, you know, have you ever thought about investing in property? Because it always goes up in value, even if it's a little bit, you know, up and down along the way, and you can make some income from it. So I thought, yeah, that sounds like a great idea. I'll do it. And with that, I went to my local estate agent, and where we lived, there used to be a local higher education college, which has actually since closed down. But at the time, there were lots of student shared houses. And so I ended up buying a shared student house. And so my very first investment property was actually an HMO, would you believe it or not? And it was a student shared HMO. And it was really a great investment because it gave me some income, but it also gave me some capital growth. And a few years after having that property, I ended up refinancing it and going again and going again and going again. And that's really kind of how I first got started in property.
Yeah. And well, that's surprising because many people say they didn't know about refinancing, especially about 20 years ago. It wasn't as much done or heard about. So tell us, after you got that first HMO, how did it go? And how did you come upon that you could refinance and take money out of your property?
Well, when I bought that property, you couldn't even buy buy-to-let mortgages. You couldn't get a buy-to-let mortgages. They hadn't been invented. So I had to go to the bank and I had to write a business plan to take out a business loan. So the very first chunk of money, if you like, that I raised for my business was through applying for a business loan. I even had to go and be interviewed by the bank manager. I mean, it makes me sound like I'm about 100 years old, doesn't it? But that was how I first got finance. Now, I think what happened was I can't remember whether I used to try and read what I could. Of course, this was, again, really before the internet, before there were the forums and the information that you can get now. But I remember Mortgage Express started, and they started to offer mortgages for buy-to-let investors. And I started to sort of explore the idea about putting my student property onto a mortgage rather than having a long-term loan. And when I inquired with Mortgage Express, they said, well, you could actually refinance the property and get more money out. So you could actually get out, I think it was about another £40,000. And I thought, that sounds amazing, because that means that I could buy another couple of properties. So what I did was it must have been about £40,000. And I decided that I was going to buy auction properties because they were much, much cheaper. So I kind of looked around for what auctions were happening in the vicinity. And I ended up going to Haydock Race Course, where I think it was Clive Emson and Sons were running an auction. And I mean, honestly, Stephanie, I don't want to make this public because it makes me sound like a total amateur, and I would never do this today. I literally bought two properties out of that auction catalogue. I didn't know where they were. Actually, one of them I knew where it was because it was quite near to where I lived. One of them, I had no idea where it was. I just knew it was near Chester. And I bought two properties. I hadn't viewed them. I had done no due diligence whatsoever. I knew nothing about these properties. And I just literally went, that looks like a good one. So the first one was £11,500. I bought a two-bed property in Crewe for £11,500, which is now worth about £90,000. And the second property was a two-bed property in Blaken, which is near Chester, and that was about £30,000. And we actually turned that into a flip. We did it up and we sold it on. And it was the most crazy, you know, when you're in your 20s, you just do these things, don't you? And I just did them because I thought, I've got nothing to lose. It's only £40,000. Who cares? But that was my mindset back then. It was very naive and probably very, very risky. But that was truly what happened. So I think I heard about the refinance really through the mortgage company, because they were becoming more aggressive. I don't mean that in a bad way, but I mean they were getting better at marketing their products. They were getting, because this was the early 2000s. So it must have been about 2001, I suppose. And they were starting to, you know, sell these products to the marketplace because they knew that there was going to be a demand for them for buy-to-let mortgages.
Yeah, no, that sounds great. I love that you got started. And also, there are so many people who would have come into a windfall, and because they didn't get that little kernel or nugget, they wouldn't have invested in property and had those great returns. And I just wanted to draw it out to people. I can hear this class ring going on at your end.
Sorry, that's Andy making his lunch.
No, I'm probably making yours as well, so.
Yeah, I hope so. You better.
That's one of the upsides of partnerships. You get your lunch made. So I just wanted to point out, within 20 years, what would have felt like a lot at the time, £11,000 the property was worth, and now it's worth nine times as much over that period. So,
and actually, if that property had been in London, it probably would be worth £300,000. You know, it would have gone up massively in that time. We haven't had huge amounts of capital growth here in the Northwest. It's been reasonable. It's been okay, but it hasn't been anything, you know, as good as you would have seen in the Southeast. But of course, property for me has the capital growth is great, but I've always invested for cash flow. That's been my main concern, is how much am I making on that property every month? And one thing I do think we get up here in the Northwest is really good yields.
Yeah. And so that was a two bed, wasn't it? So you're probably, that wasn't an HMO.
No, that wasn't an HMO.
So that's just been a single let. But your very first property was an HMO. So tell us about how you went from there. You'd bought a few single lets to actually growing this HMO business.
What happened was I was working full time and I had four boys by this stage. So we're talking sort of early 2012. And I had a small portfolio of properties which were doing quite well, but not really anything particularly exciting. And certainly I wasn't earning enough to give up my job. And I was becoming more and more disillusioned with my job, the demands that were made on me, the lack of freedom I had, and the work required, I suppose, to get to the next rung and earn more money. And I discovered Rich Dad Poor Dad purely, again, by a bit of a fluke. One day I came home from work and there was a card, a postcard sitting on my doormat saying Rich Dad is going to be running an event locally and would you like to attend? And then in tiny, tiny little letters at the bottom, Robert Kiyosaki will not be in person at this event. just to clarify that, you know. And I thought, well, I've never even heard of Robert Kiyosaki. I mean, who is he? Who is this guy who claims to be Rich Dad? You know, I've never heard of him. So I looked him up and I found the book, Rich Dad, Poor Dad. And I thought, well, I'll give this a shot, you know, see if it's any good. And I devoured it in the next 48 hours. And literally, I couldn't put this book down. And I realized what I was doing wrong. I realized that I had been investing for long-term capital growth. And up here, you know, don't bother because there's very little. And I hadn't been focusing enough on cash flow. And I then, it was like a penny that, or a light bulb that went on, a penny that dropped, all those other mental analogies that you can make up that said to me, right, this is the time to go back into your roots, HMOs. And by that stage, there had been a lot more legislation passed. There was a lot more clarity about, you know, the need to have a license if you were a big HMO. Again, that's changed even since then. And I knew a lot about HMOs already, but I think I had just kind of moved away from that strategy. And I came back to the strategy. And so in order to check whether this would indeed would work and would be a good strategy, I decided to invest in a property in Crewe. And again, interestingly, it was a two-bed property, but I turned it into a four-bed HMO just to see if it would work locally, because I wasn't convinced that the area was right or that I'd get tenants or that, you know, I'd make any money. I thought I've got to test this first. So I did this test. It was what my husband called a beta test because he was from an IT background. So we did our beta HMO and it worked really, really well. And within about 2 months, I then was looking for the next project.
Great. Well, I think this is a great time to transition into investments, because first of all, you got a windfall to get started, you know, 20 years ago with property. But then we're talking 10, 11 years ago, you decided to do it a little bit more seriously and intensively. And so I think you've got an interesting story about how you got the investment to get started and grow the business.
So, yeah, what happened, Steph, was that I then found another property that I thought would make an excellent HMO and decided that it was a large three-bed semi, and I thought this would work really well as a six-bed HMO. So I decided to bring in my builder, talk to him about the plans, draw up some plans, and start to look at how we would turn this into a six-bed. And I had just about enough money to buy the property on a mortgage and then do the refurb. But while the refurb was happening, he called me one day and he said, Wendy, I'd love you to come down. I need to show you something about this property. And I thought, oh no, what's he discovered? You know, is it some dreadful lead piping that needs to be removed, or, you know, something really expensive that's going to happen? This is not good news. And I was kind of dreading what he was going to show me. But when I arrived at the property, he had the ladder down or up to the loft, and he had the loft hatch open. And he said, come up, I want to show you this. And as I sort of tentatively made my way up the ladder, fearing a rat crawling over my head or a bat or something like that, he said, no, I want to show you the space. And as I walked and I stood up in the loft space, he said, you know, you could make this into a seven-bed HMO and it would be really, really good. And I thought, yes, we've got to do it. You know, we're not going to get this opportunity again. Now's the time to expand and if you like, grow the spec of this project and go into the loft. So I said to him, Yep, do what you need to do, Andy. He was called Andy. Everybody in our business is called Andy. That's just your name if you work with me. So my builder was called Andy as well. And I said, go into the loft and, you know, tell me a price, work out the price, and then later on we'll have a phone call. And, you know, but I'd like you to start working on it. And then I got home and I sat down and I thought, there's just one problem. I can't afford to do the loft conversion because all my money is already committed. And I had about two nights where I really didn't sleep with worry because I had committed to do this piece of work. And it was going to be about another £25,000 to £30,000 worth of work. And I really didn't know where it was coming from because we had utilized all our savings. I'd even cashed in a life insurance policy to do this. My husband was still working full time, so he was still sort of paying the bills, as it were, paying our mortgage, while I went off and did this sort of, again, probably what some people saw as another crazy stint from Wendy going off into her property world. But I just knew I could make it work. So I then started to realize that I'm going to have to raise funds from somebody else. And it was actually a friend of mine who ended up lending me the money. This is my first chunk of raising money, and I raised the money from her. I gave her a repayment deal on that loan, and over the next 5 years, I repaid her the money, and with interest, of course, as well. So she got interest on her capital, which she was delighted about, and I was too, because then I got 7-bed HMO, which we then, of course, refinanced, and we were able to then, because I had a 5-year deal with her, I actually then used the money to do another HMO, utilizing the money we'd raised from that project. But as always happens in property, you run out of your own money. And it's what I say, it's when you run out of your own money that your learning really begins. And a bit like you, Stephanie, with rent to rent, you had to do rent to rent because you didn't have the money to buy. You didn't have the money to invest. And many people find that this is what happens to them, is that they think, oh, I can't do it because I haven't got the money. And I would say, well, there's lots of different ways in which you can either raise the money, or you can find other people who've got money, or you can do something like rent to rent that increases your cash flow and you get some experience. And you can then, because you've got credibility, raise finance. Yeah. So I'd maxed out everything. I'd maxed out credit cards. You know, we had loans, we had everything. And it was a little bit nail biting. Absolutely. Yeah. There's no doubt about it. But I then ended up going, I think the last £3,000 I had on my credit card, I spent on a property course, a property mastermind course. Actually, it was Simon Zucci's property mastermind course. And literally, you know, I couldn't buy anything else. I couldn't spend any more money. That was kind of it. But I just knew I had to go on this 3-day weekend to learn more about property and learn more about property strategies. And there were loads of things there that I hadn't even heard about, like purchase lease options, delayed completion, all these other sort of strategies that you can use. But it was while I was at this event that I met a guy who kind of came up to me, and we started talking about our property experience. And he, I suppose, could see something in me, my appetite to do more, my knowledge about property, because by then I'd been investing for probably just over 10 years. So although it'd been very, very slow and steady, I had obviously, I could see the changes in the market. I knew what was happening. I understood legislation and so on, because I'd kept up to date with all of that. And I had two HMOs. And I think he thought, we could work together. He had some money to invest. I had some time and I had opportunity. So we formed a joint venture. And it was from that partnership, that business partnership, that we then did 6 projects together. And that was really, I think, where my HMO portfolio really blossomed, because I was then able to implement what I was learning. I was able to scale up the business, and I was able to do multiple projects, really one after another during the next couple of years. So we built a, you know, profitable and really very well regarded HMO portfolio during that time.
Oh, I really like that, Wendy, because a lot of people can relate to feeling, I haven't got the money to do this. And although you did start off with some money, you then ran out and as everybody does, and you needed to get more. And many people at that point would have stopped, but you carried on. And there are some nuggets there about how to raise private finance. And I think one there was that he could see something in you, that you were keen, you were enthusiastic, you were knowledgeable, and he could just see that you were going to be successful. And I think there's something to that inner confidence and that knowing that you will succeed that does attract investors. So what are the key tips that you would say to somebody listening to this who would really like to start or grow their property investment but doesn't have the money themselves?
Well, I think the first thing would be that confidence doesn't come first. Action comes first. Confidence follows action. So the first thing is you've got to commit to doing something, because a lot of people say to me, well, I'm just not really confident about raising money. And I say, well, you're not going to be confident because you've never done it before. What makes you think you're going to naturally just feel confident about raising money if you've never done it? That's not how the human brain or the human psyche works. You have to do something first to feel confident. So don't expect to feel confident, because you won't. But what you need to do is still take action about this. So one of the things I think is your network is really important when it comes to raising money, and also your profile. And I would dispute when people talk about not having any credibility, because sometimes people will say to me, well, I can't raise money because I haven't got any credibility. I've never done it before, or I haven't got the experience, or I haven't got any projects to show for it. And it was true. I did have some experience and I had some projects to show for it, which did help my credibility. And long term, that does help your credibility. But I really believe that if you are an adult in the UK, you already have some credibility. How? Well, you probably stayed at school for 18 years and you might have some qualifications. You may have had a job. You may have run a project. You may have managed competing responsibilities. Let's say you're a mom. You're at home with a couple of kids. Don't tell me that doesn't give you some experience. It does. That gives you the ability to project manage. You're probably often a nurse, a teacher, a homemaker. You're a gardener. You are a, you know, you're a bill manager. You're a budgeting accountant. You're doing all of those things. And yet society might just see you as a mum staying at home with her kids. Well, actually, it's much, much, much more than that. And I think we can underestimate what we have and what we bring into a joint venture partnership or into that position where we then start to raise money. I had a client, for example, a few years ago who was exactly in that position. She had a part-time job. She had three children under the age of five, and she had never invested in HMOs or property before, and she'd never raised money before. Within 2 weeks of me working with her, she had raised £150,000 for her first HMO development, which she carried out over that following year. And she refinanced it at the end of the year and got all the money back and gave it back to the investor with interest. So I don't believe it when people say they can't do it because they haven't done it before or haven't got the credibility. It doesn't work like that. You have to do it first, and then you get the credibility, and then you get the confidence.
Wow, I can hear people saying, right, how do I get in touch with that Wendy? So I put on the screen for those of you who are watching on the website, you'll be able to see this at renttorentsuccess.com. Let me see what episode we're on. I think it's 194, renttorentsuccess.com/194. You'll be able to see this episode. And it's wendywl.uk. Have I got that right? So if you want to get in touch with Wendy, Wendy can teach you how to be successful with HMOs, buying them, but also, as you've just heard, how to raise finance. So we've talked about how you got into property, and I would just love to know that first HMO that you bought, how much did an HMO cost 20 years ago?
So, well, this was the very first student one. I paid about £46,000 for it.
Yeah, yeah.
And I did nothing to it because it was already rented. So I literally did nothing to it. The student contracts were already in place. I bought it about the July, August time. All the students said they wanted to come back in September. So I just had to issue new ASTs. They came back in the September and I just milked it for all it was worth.
Fantastic. So you paid 46,000 and you're in the Northwest where you said the equity value is not so much, but how much do you reckon it's gone up to nowadays?
We think it's probably about £280,000 now. We still own the property. I think it's about between 270 and 280 now.
Yeah. So somewhere between five and six times it's gone up. And in that time, you'd have had, well, I'm guessing hundreds of thousands of pounds of cash flow as well.
Absolutely. That's the great thing about HMOs is that it isn't just about your capital growth. It's the cash flow that's really remarkable. And I always say, you don't need very many HMOs. If you might say to me, I don't really want to do HMOs, Wendy. I'd really rather do commercial conversions, or I'd rather do serviced accommodation or something, which I can appreciate. But the thing about HMOs is it's, in my view, the quickest, most effective way of replacing your job income, whether you do it through the rent-to-rent model or you've got capital to invest or you've got other people's capital to invest. If you want to give up your job and free up your time, and let's face it, that is the resource none of us can make any more of. We can grow our income. We can make more money. The government can print more money. So money is not the resource that we lack. It's time, which is what we lack, and sometimes energy as well, particularly as you get older, let me tell you. You have to be mindful of how you spend every minute to make the most of all the energy that you have, because let me tell you, by 8:30 at night, you're, fast asleep on the sofa in front of Netflix. So for me, it was always about recognizing how did I make the most of the time that I had? How quickly could I get to the point where I could give up my job? And I think if people are listening and that's their thought, is they'd like to give up their job. And I know not everybody does want to, but some people want to have the option to be able to do that. Then for me, making another £3,000 to £5,000 a month on a regular basis, the best way to do that is through HMOs.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And if you resonate with what Wendy is saying and you would like to either buy now you've got money ready to go, or whether you want to raise finance and become better at that, then I wendywl.uk. And Wendy's also on Instagram at wendy_whittakerlarge, and you can DM her there. So Wendy, we've talked about getting started, the power of the equity, the cash flow, and also the power in being able to raise finance.
Sorry, Stephanie. We're in a big shared kitchen here, As you can tell, it's a family room. I'm so sorry. I probably should have gone into my office to record this, but just feel like you're part of the family. Would you like a slice of this delicious cake that I made that Andy's about to have for his lunch?
Oh gosh, I love that you bake, Wend.
Oh, I do. I got down to the last 100 in the Great British Bake Off, a few years ago.
Did you? Oh my gosh. So what are you having today? What's the cake?
Today is a lemon and cream. It's like a Victoria sponge, but it's a lemon Victoria sponge. So rather than having jam, it's got lemon curd in it and fresh cream.
And my two favourite cakes are Victoria sponge, which you often can't get. It used to be very popular, but now not so much. Although a bit of a revival, I'm thinking. Yes. And lemon drizzle. So that's like a combo of the two.
Absolutely. You'd love this. I'll package up the last slice and send it to you.
Thanks so much. I'll be waiting for that. So really what we're talking about is the power investment to get freedom and the time that we want. And I know that, Wendy, you've got a lot of passion projects that you're now able to do because your time is not taken up with your business. You've been able to hire out to a team. So talk to me about the process of systemizing and hiring out to a team and what that's allowed you to do.
I think it's really important that you have an eye on that when you start, because it's very easy to get very enmeshed in your whole business. You're the one who has to make the decisions. You're the one who has to raise the finance. You have to find the properties. And to start with, I think for the first couple of years when you're involved in property, it really is you and you're mostly on your own. You've got to start thinking, though, about how you can get other people to help you, because leverage of money is important. Leverage of time, other people's time, is equally important. What happened to me was I got to about 50 rooms in my portfolio, and I was just finding that I was dropping a few tasks. Things weren't getting done as well as they should do. I wasn't managing as well as I wanted to. And so I took on my first member of staff, and she was part-time. She was only working, I think, 15 hours a week. And that was quite a big leap into the unknown for me, because suddenly I was now responsible for somebody else's income. And I had to make sure that all my rooms were filled and that we were profitable enough so that I could pay this new lady who came to help me. But it really was massively helpful, because it meant that I could start to think about how to take on the next property, rather than worrying about filling a room, rather than worrying about doing a fire alarm check or a maintenance call out. That a lot of that, not all of it, but a lot of it was taken up by Jennifer, who was my first member of staff. And it meant that I could then grow the business. And this is the problem. If you don't have a staff member, or you haven't got an agency who can manage that property for you, you're going to be the one doing it all. And eventually you end up swapping your time for money. Now, I know that for some people, finding an agency who can manage HMOs is a bit tricky. There aren't many of us around. And doing it well takes a certain attitude and skills, which I think are in short supply in the rental agency world, many of whom are used to simple single buy-to-let properties. So because of that, we actually set up our own lettings agency a few years ago. So we now manage our own HMO rooms and also a suite of other people's, because we just kept getting asked all the time, could you manage my HMO? Could you manage my HMO? Because we have a 24 hours answering service. We have a team. We have a lettings team and a maintenance team. So we've structured the business in a way that we know it works, because we ourselves own HMOs and we know what's needed to make it happen. And it's allowed us then to scale that and say to other people, we can offer this service to you as well, because we know this is what you need if you own HMOs. Mm-hmm. But it also manages our single buy-to-let portfolio, which has also grown over the years. And we have a couple of commercial properties as well. So the agency now effectively manages all our properties, which is great. And it means that I can be released from the day-to-day running to be able to look at new projects, to continue to raise investor finance, to continue to look at scaling the business.
Mm. And are you still buying now? What's in the future for you property-wise, Wendy?
Yeah, so we're actually looking at a mixed-use commercial building at the moment in Stoke. Got a viewing tomorrow for that. This is my second viewing. I'm hoping to do a bit of a deal. We were trying to negotiate a lease option, but I don't think the buyer is keen on a lease option. So we've been talking to our mortgage broker about it. I think we might get it on bridging and then do a refurb and then go on to an exit strategy. But there's a few bits and pieces we've got to figure out about the building first, whether that would work. We're looking at a couple of other properties at the moment for my son, my third son, who doesn't own any property yet. My first two do, but my third son wants to get into property. So I'm actually viewing a couple of properties for him next week. These are just single buy-to-lets that he's getting started with. And we're actually thinking about launching an estate agency. So rather than just running lettings, we're thinking about getting into sales. We've got a new member of staff who came on board in June time, and she's got a background in sales, and we think she'd be very good in an estate agency role. So we're exploring that as well at the moment, and we've got a sort of half-written business plan, but we think that sales could be a very lucrative and interesting string to the bow.
Yes, and I was shocked to find a friend of mine went into sales, and she said, you don't actually need very much to do it. But I'll be interested to hear, more offline. But Yeah, and we're coming to the end, Wendy. There were so many more things I wanted to cover.
I have to have part two, won't we? And I'll promise I'll do it in a slightly quieter location with less delicious smells of cake in the background.
I know, I'm well, Jill, again, with the, now I'm thinking of, I was just thinking of like sandwiches maybe, which I was about to say, and then that you're having cake, I'm yeah, my mouth is watering. But what, is there anything I haven't asked you about, Wendy, that you'd like to say as we're closing today?
Well, that's a wonderful invitation. Thank you, Stephanie. So the only thing I would like to add is about the council tax work that I've been doing, because this really is very important to me. As you may know, individual rooms are being banded for council tax. You may have been affected, or you might know somebody who's been affected. It hasn't affected lots and lots of HMOs yet, but it could do. I would say it's probably only maybe 5 to 10% of HMOs have been affected by this. But because of the fact that it's being so it's being applied so indiscriminately, you could be the next one who is affected. And I would really just like to say that there is help out there. Thank you, Stephanie. She's put our website on the bottom there, hmosandcouncil tax.co.uk. So please do get in touch if this is an issue that's bothering you or you are worried about it. We give some initial advice and handholding if you decide that you want to go down the appeals route, and that we've got lots of information that we like to help people with. Our aim is to get this changed in legislation. So we want the law to recognise that an HMO is one property. It's not 5 or 6 separate rooms that should all have separate council tax applied. And we want to help tenants and landlords who are suffering in this situation. So this is something that I've been, I've really had the pleasure of being involved in. I started this group about 2 years ago. There was just a group of 3 of us when we started, but we've grown it now. We've got 2,000 members on our Facebook page. So again, look for us on the on Facebook as well. You can join our page, get some more information there. But it's something which I'm really passionate about, because I feel it's very unfair, and because I'm very passionate about HMOs. I think they do a lot for the housing economy, they do a lot for tenants, and they do a lot for landlords, and I want to preserve them and make them stronger in the future. So that's why I'm involved in that campaign.
Absolutely, totally agree. And when I heard from you when we met up at the HMO Man of Mind that was organised by Coho, I was absolutely appalled by what's happening, because I don't think many people realise the way that councils are bringing in these new rules indiscriminately and actually charging tenants for the council tax per room years after they've moved out of a property, which I hadn't realised was the case at all.
Yes, absolutely. And it's, you know, many of those tenants have left years ago. They had no idea that they were supposed to be paying it. It's been retrospectively applied. So there's lots of injustice going on. And as we know, many tenants who live in HMOs, they live there because it's the most affordable version of independent living that they can afford. And therefore, we as a country, I believe, should be supporting those people who are probably wishing to eventually get to earn more money. They might, in fact, some of my tenants have, funnily enough, become property investors themselves, because of seeing what I've done. They've gone from tenants to landlords, which is a really, you know, great leap to make. And I love it when I hear those kind of stories. But I think that, you know, if we as a country are going to be providing good quality accommodation, we've also got to make it affordable. And I think it's not helping when the government are imposing extra taxation, which is effectively like a poll tax, when those are the tenants, those are the people who are probably least likely to able to afford it.
Yeah. And really, it is just a way for the local councils to earn extra money, because for each new dwelling, so if they class an HMO as one dwelling, they get paid one amount. If they class it as 6 dwellings, they get paid 6 amounts. And it can be quite substantial for the council. And that's why some of them are doing it. But do go over to HMOs and Council Tax if you want to find out more about that. If you want to know what to do about that from a rent-to-rent perspective, it's very important that you have that in your contracts, that if the council tax obligations for that property change, then so will your rent, etc. So Wendy, thank you so much for coming on and sharing how to really grow and build your property business with your own funds and also using other people's funds. And as you know, you can go and find Wendy at wendywl.uk. And also, I'll have all these links underneath the video at renttorentsuccess.com/194 for episode 194. And also do come and see us live. I believe from memory, Wendy, I think it's Wednesday, the 14th of September.
That's it. I think, isn't that a Thursday? Anyway, it's the 14th of September, whatever day of the week it is, Stephanie, you have to look it up. But yeah, it's definitely the 14th of September in Central London.
It's a Thursday.
Central London. And it's going to be a fantastic day with some great speakers, goodie bags, lots and lots of amazing content. I myself am thoroughly looking forward to it. I think it's going to be a wonderful day. And yes, if you want to come along and meet me, meet Stephanie, meet some other very, very inspirational women who've built businesses, started from scratch, had their money mindset completely turned around by what they've been able to achieve, I think it's going to be an inspirational and really thoroughly exciting day. And we'd love to meet you and see you there.
Yes, and it's Iconic Women for Wealth. Kylie Anderson is our host for the day, and I will put the link underneath this video as well. Do book, because I'm as excited by the speakers as I am about meeting everybody there and the networking, the connecting. Networking sounds so cold sometimes, but the connecting with people and with other women who are interested in wealth building. So thank you so much, Wendy, for joining us and sharing your wisdom today. And we'll see you on the 14th of September.
Thank you, Stephanie.
Bye for now. Remember, believe bigger, be bolder, be a game changer. See you next week. Thank you so much for being with me here today. If you would like more, we've written the number one best-selling book on rent to rent. You can find it at renttorentsuccess.com/book. Reviewers on Amazon have described it as the best rent to rent HMO book and also as a definitive reference guide and inspirational. Take your next step today and buy the book. You can find it at renttorentsuccess.com/book. And I'll see you again next time. Until then, remember, believe bigger, be bolder, be a game changer.